Glute certainty. Carla starts up the stairs without a word. Mom and I spend the next half hour watching Carla pack. She has reading glasses and pens and clipboards in almost every room. I don't bother to wipe away my tears because they just keep coming. Mom holds herself more rigid than I've ever seen her. When we finally get to my room, I give Carla my copy of Flowers for Algernon. She looks at me and smiles. "Isn't this book going to make me cry?" she asks. "Probably." She pulls the book close to her bosom and holds it there, and doesn't take her eyes off me. "You be brave now, Madeline." I run into her arms. She drops her medical bag and the book and holds me tight. "I'm so sorry," I whisper. She squeezes me even tighter.
"It's not your fault. Life is a gift. Don't forget to live it."
Her voice is fierce. "That's enough now," my mom snaps from the doorway. Her patience has run out. "I know this is very sad for you both. Believe it or not, it's sad for me as well. But it's time for you to go. Now." Carla lets me go. "Be brave. Remember, life is a gift." She picks up her medical case. We all walk downstairs together. Mom hands her a final check, and she's gone. Madeline's Dictionary. Asymptote. Noun. Plural. Asymptotes. 1. A wish that continually approaches, but never achieves fulfillment. 2015. Whittier. Mirror Image. I pull the curtains aside as soon as I'm back in my room. Ollie's standing at his window, his forehead pressed into his fist pressed into the glass. How long has he been waiting? It takes him a second to realize I'm there, but it's enough time for me to see his fear. Evidently, my function in life is to strike fear into the hearts of those who love me. Not that Ollie loves me. His eyes roam over my body, my face. He makes a typing gesture with his hands, but I shake my head. He frowns, makes the gesture again, but I shake my head again. He disappears from the window and returns with a marker. I read his words like a mirror image. "Are you okay?" I nod. "Are you?" I mouth. "Yes, I am." I shake my head. "Grounded?" I nod. "No internet?" I nod. "How long?" I shrug. "Sure you're okay?" I pantomime excellent health, existential angst, regret, and an enormous sense of loss, all via a single nod. We stare mutely at each other. "I'm sorry?" I shake my head, a gesture that says, "No, don't be sorry. It's not your fault. It's not you. It's this life." Schedule change. Monday. Mom home on vacay. Wednesday and Thursday, nurse interviews. Friday, FF night, dinner croque monsieur. Saturday, nurse interviews. Sunday, more nurse interviews. Monday, Nurse Pritchard's first day. Friday. FF night. Dinner. Soup à la oignon. More than this. My mom wordlessly kneels to gather scraps of drawings from our game of honor Pictionary and stacks them into a neat pile. She keeps the best, defined here as either really good or really bad, ones from each game. We sometimes look through our collection nostalgically, the way other families look through old photos. Her fingers linger atop a particularly bad drawing of some sort of horned creature hovering above a circle with holes in it. She holds the drawing up for me to see. How did you guess nursery rhyme from this? She chuckles with effort, trying to break the ice. I don't know, I say and laugh, wanting to meet her halfway. You are a terrible drawer. The creature was supposed to be a cow, and the circle was supposed to be the moon. Truly, my guess was inspired, given how awful her drawing was. She pauses, stacking for a moment, and sits back on her heels. I really had a good time with you this week, she says. I nod, but don't say anything back. Her smile fades. Now that Ollie and I can't see or talk to each other, my mom and I spend more time together. It's the only good thing to come out of this mess. I reach out and grab her hand, squeeze it. Me too. She smiles again, but less fully now. I hired one of the nurses. I nod. She offered to let me interview Carla's potential replacements, but I declined. It doesn't matter who she hires. No one's ever going to be able to replace Carla. I have to go back to work tomorrow. I know. I wish I didn't have to leave you. I'll be okay. She straightens the already perfectly straight stack of drawings. You understand why I have to do the things I'm doing. Besides firing Carla, she's also revoked my internet privileges and canceled my in-person architecture lesson with Mr. Waterman. We've mostly avoided talking about this all week. My lies. Carla. Ollie. She took the week off from work and tended to me in Carla's absence. She took my vitals every hour instead of every two and slumped with relief each time the results were normal. By day four, she said we were out of the woods. We got lucky, she said. What are you thinking? She asks. I miss Carla. I do too, but I'd be a bad mother if I let her stay. Do you understand? She put your life in danger. She was my friend, I say quietly. The anger that I'd been expecting from her all week finally sparks. But she wasn't just your friend. She was your nurse. She was supposed to keep you safe. She wasn't supposed to endanger your life or introduce you to teenage boys who are going to break your heart. Friends don't give you false hope. I must look as stricken as I feel because she suddenly stops and wipes her palms down the front of her thighs. Oh, baby girl. I'm so sorry. And that's when it really hits me, and all at once. Carla's really gone. She won't be here tomorrow when my mom leaves for work. Instead, it will be someone new. Carla's gone, and it's my fault. And Ollie's gone, too. I won't ever get a chance at kiss number two. I gasp against the pain of the thought, against the end of something barely even begun. I'm sure my mom will eventually allow me access to the internet and will be able to IM again. But it won't be enough. If I'm honest with myself, I'll admit that it was never going to be enough. I'll never get to the end of all the ways I want to be with him. She presses her hand against her own heart. I know we're feeling the same pain. Tell me about him, she says. I've wanted to tell her about him for so long, but now I'm not sure where to begin. My heart is so full of him. So, I begin at the beginning. I tell her about seeing him for the first time, about the way he moves, light and fluid and certain. I tell her about his ocean eyes and calloused fingers. I tell her how he's less cynical than he thinks he is, about his awful dad, about his dubious wardrobe choices. I tell her that he thinks I'm funny and smart and beautiful in that order and that the order matters. All the things I've wanted to say for weeks. She listens and holds my hand and cries along with me. He sounds wonderful. I see why you think so. He is. I'm sorry that you're sick. It's not your fault. I know, but I wish that I could give you more than this. Can I have my internet privileges back? I have to try. She shakes her head. Ask me for something else, honey. Please, Mom. It's better this way. I don't want you to have a broken heart. Love can't kill me, I say, parroting Carla's words. That's not true, she says. Whoever told you that? Nurse Evil. My new nurse is an unsmiling despot with a nursing degree. Her name is Janet Pritchard. You may call me Nurse Janet, she says. Her voice is unnaturally high, like an alarm. She emphasizes the word nurse so that I understand that simply calling her Janet will not do. Her handshake is too firm, as if she's more used to crushing things than caring for them. It's possible that my view of her is biased. All I see when I look at her is how much she's not Carla. She's thin where Carla was stout. Her speech is not peppered with Spanish words. She has no accent at all. Compared with Carla, she's altogether less. By the afternoon, I've decided to adjust my attitude, but that's when the first of her notes appears, stickied to my laptop. Daily prescriptives from the desk of Janet Pritchard, RN. Rules are not meant to be broken. No internet after 3 p.m. My mom has reinstated my internet access, but only during the school day. She says I'm only supposed to be using it for schoolwork, but I'm sure the fact that Ali has started school and only gets home after 3 p.m. has something to do with it. I check the time. It's 2:30 p.m. I decide not to adjust my attitude. Nurse Janet could have at least given me a chance to break the rule before assuming that I would be a rule breaker. Things don't improve the next day. Daily prescriptives from the desk of Janet Pritchard, RN. Don't forget, moping is unhealthy. Notes. I expect 3 smiles from you daily. Missed smiles carry over. Turn that frown upside down. Now. Over the next week, I give up any hope I had that she could be persuaded to my cause. Her mission is clear. Monitor, contain, and control. Ali and I settle into a new rhythm. We IM in short bursts during the day in between my Skype classes. At 3 p.m., Nurse Evil turns off the router and our communication ends. At night, after dinner, and after my mom and I spend time with each other, Ollie and I stare at each other out the window. I plead with my mom about the rule, but she refuses to budge. She says it's for my own protection. The next day, Nurse Evil finds another reason to leave me a note. Daily prescriptives from the desk of Janet Pritchard, RN. Don't forget, life is a gift. Do not waste it. Notes. Finish all your apple slices. I stare at the note, remembering that Carla had said the same thing as she was leaving. Life is a gift. Am I wasting mine? Neighborhood Watch, number 2. Ollie's schedule. 6:55 a.m. Stands at window, writes, "Good morning," on the glass. 7:20 a.m. Waits for Kara to finish her cigarette. 7:25 a.m. Leaves for school. 3:45 p.m. returns home from school. 3:50 p.m. stands at window, erases "good morning," and writes "hi" on glass. 9:05 p.m. stands at window, writes a few questions. 10 p.m. writes "good night, Maddie," on the glass. Maddie's schedule. 6:50 a.m. waits for Ollie to appear at window. 6:55 a.m. is joyful. 7:25 a.m. despairs. 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. ignores Nurse Evil, attends classes, does homework, reads. Compulsively checks for IM messages. Reads some more. 3:40 p.m. watches for Ollie's car to arrive. 3:50 p.m. is joyful. 4 p.m. more homework, more reading. 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. dinner, hang out with mom. 9:01 p.m. waits for Ollie to appear at window. 9:05 p.m. is joyful. Pantomimes answers to questions. 10:01 p.m. despair continued. Higher education. With Ollie back in school, our IM sessions are even more limited. He IMs when he can, in between classes, or sometimes right in the middle of one. During his first week back, he does his best to make me feel as if I'm right there with him. He sends pictures of his locker, number 23, his class schedule, the library, and the librarian, who looks exactly as I imagine a high school librarian would, which is to say, bookish and wonderful. He sends pictures of math proofs from his AP math class, his AP English required reading list, pictures of beakers and petri dishes from his biology and chemistry classes. I spend that first week, and it does feel like spending, like not seeing him is costing me something, doing all my normal things, reading, learning, not dying. I write alternate titles for the books on his reading list. A Tale of Two Kisses. To Kiss a Mockingbird. As I Lay Kissing. And so on. Nurse Evil and I settle into a grudging routine where I pretend she doesn't exist and she leaves ever more obnoxious sticky notes to let me know that she does. But it's not just about missing him. I'm also jealous of his life, of his world that expands beyond his front door. He tells me that high school is no utopia, but I'm not convinced. What else would you call a place that exists solely to teach you about the world? What do you call a place with friends and teachers and libraries and book club and math club and debate club and any other kind of club and after-school activities and endless possibilities? By the third week, it becomes harder to sustain our relationship in this new form. I miss talking to him. You can only pantomime so much. I miss being in the same room with him, his physical presence. I miss the way my body was always aware of his. I miss getting to know him. I miss getting to know the Maddie that I am when I'm with him. We continue like this until finally the inevitable happens. I'm standing at the window as his car pulls up. I wait for him to exit to wave our customary wave, but he doesn't get out first. A girl that is not Kara emerges from the back of the car. Maybe she's a friend of Kara's. But then Kara slams out of the car and into the house, leaving Ollie and Mystery Girl alone. Mystery Girl laughs at something Ollie says. She turns, puts her hand on his shoulder, and smiles at him, the way I've smiled at him. I'm shocked at first, not quite believing what my eyes are seeing. Is she touching my Ollie? My stomach clenches. I'm being squeezed around the middle by a giant hand. My organs are displaced until I feel wrong inside my own skin. I let the curtain fall and duck away from the window. I feel like a peeping Tom. My mom's words come back to me. I don't want you to have a broken heart. She knew what would happen. There was always going to be someone else. Someone who isn't sick. Someone who can leave her house. Someone he can talk to and touch and kiss and everything else. I stifle the urge to go back to the window and assess my competition. But it's not a competition if one person can't even show up for the event. And it doesn't matter what she looks like. It doesn't matter if she's long or short-legged. It doesn't matter if she's pale or tanned, if her hair is black or brown or red or blonde. It doesn't matter if she's pretty or not. It matters that she feels the sun on her skin. She breathes unfiltered air. It matters that she lives in the same world that Ollie does, and I don't. I never will. I take another peek. Her hand is still on his shoulder, and she's still laughing. He's frowning up at my window, but I'm sure he can't see me. He waves anyway, but I duck down again, pretending to both of us that I'm not there. Aloha means hello and goodbye. Part 1. I've canceled yet another mother-daughter night, so my mom stops by my room. "So," she says, "I'm sorry I canceled, Mom. I'm just feeling out of sorts." She immediately presses the back of her hand to my forehead. "Mentally, not physically," I clarify. I can't get the image of Mystery Girl's hand on Ollie's shoulder out of my head. She nods, but doesn't remove her hand until she's satisfied that I'm not feverish. "So," I say, prompting her, "I really do want to be alone. I was a teenager once, and an only child. I was very lonely. I found being a teenager to be very painful." "This is why she's here? Because she thinks I'm lonely? because she thinks I'm having some sort of teenage angst? I am not lonely, Mom, I snap. I am alone. Those are different things. She flinches but doesn't retreat. Instead, she lets go of whatever she is holding and caresses my cheek until I meet her eyes. I know, baby girl. Her hands are behind her back again. Maybe now is not a good time. Do you want me to go? She's always so reasonable and understanding. It's hard to be angry with her. No, it's okay. I'm sorry. Stay. I pull my legs up, making room for her. What are you hiding? I ask. I brought you a present. I thought it would make you feel less lonely, but now I'm not so sure. She pulls a framed photograph from behind her back. My heart squeezes inside my chest. It's an old photograph of the four of us. Me, my mom and dad and brother, standing on a beach, someplace tropical. The sun has set behind us, and whoever took the picture used the flash, and so our faces are bright, almost glowing against the darkening sky. My brother is holding on to my dad with one hand and clutching a small brown stuffed bunny rabbit with the other. For the most part, he's a miniature version of my mom, with her same straight black hair and dark eyes. Really, the only difference is that he has my dad's darker skin. My dad's wearing a matching Aloha print shirt and shorts. Goofy is the only word I can think of to describe him. Still, he's so handsome. His arm is wrapped around my mom's shoulder, and he seems to be pulling her closer. He's staring straight into the camera. If ever there was someone who had everything he wanted, my dad was him. Mom is wearing a red, strapless, flower-patterned sundress. Her damp hair curls around her face. She's not wearing makeup or jewelry. Really, she looks like an alternate universe version of the mom sitting next to me now. She seems to belong on that beach with those people more than she belongs stuck here in this room with me. She's holding me in her arms, and she's the only one not staring into the camera. Instead, she's laughing at me. I'm grinning that silly, gummy smile that only babies can smile. I've never seen a photo of myself outside before. I didn't know such a thing existed. Where's this? I ask. Hawaii. Maui was your dad's favorite place. Her voice is almost a whisper now. You were just 4 months old before we knew why you were always sick, a month before the accident. I clutch the photo to my chest. My mom's eyes fill with tears that don't fall. I love you, she says, more than you know. But I do know. I've always felt her heart reaching out to protect mine. I hear lullabies in her voice. I can still feel arms rocking me to sleep and her kisses on my cheeks in the morning. And I love her right back. I can't imagine the world she's given up for me. I don't know what to say. So I tell her I love her too. It's not enough. But it'll have to do. After she leaves, I stand in front of the mirror, holding the photograph next to my face. I look from the me in the photo to the me in the mirror and back again. A photograph is a kind of time machine. My room fades away, and I'm on that beach surrounded by love and salt air and the fading warmth and lengthening shadows of sunset. I fill my tiny lungs with as much air as they can take, and I hold my breath. I've been holding it ever since. Later, 9:08 p.m. Ollie's already waiting for me when I go to the window. In big, bold letters, he writes, "Lab partner." I pantomime my complete and utter lack of jealousy. Madam, I'm Adam. Sometimes I reread my favorite books from back to front. I start with the last chapter and read backward until I get to the beginning. When you read this way, characters go from hope to despair, from self-knowledge to doubt. In love stories, couples start out as lovers and end as strangers. Coming-of-age books become stories of losing your way. Your favorite characters come back to life. If my life were a book and you read it backward, nothing would change. Today is the same as yesterday. Tomorrow will be the same as today. In the book of Maddie, all the chapters are the same. Until Ollie. Before him, my life was a palindrome. The same, forward and backward, like a man, a plan, a canal, Panama, or Madam, I'm Adam. But Ollie's like a random letter. The big, bold X thrown in the middle of the word or phrase that ruins the sequence. And now my life doesn't make sense anymore. I almost wish I hadn't met him. How am I supposed to go back to my old life, my days stretching out before me with unending and brutal sameness? How am I supposed to go back to being the girl who reads? Not that I begrudge my life in books. All I know about the world, I've learned from them. But a description of a tree is not a tree. And 1,000 paper kisses will never equal the feel of Ollie's lips against mine. The glass wall. A week later, something startles me awake. I sit up. My head is foggy with sleep, but my heart is awake and racing. It knows something that my head doesn't yet know. I glance at the clock. 3:01 a.m. My curtains are closed, but I can see a glow from Ollie's room. I drag myself over to the window and push aside the curtains. His entire house is ablaze with lights. Even the porch light is on. My heart speeds up even more. Oh, no. Are they fighting again? A door slams. The sound is faint but unmistakable. I gather the curtains in my fist and wait, willing Ollie to show himself. I don't wait for long because just then he stumbles onto the porch as if he's been pushed. The urge to go to him fills me up like it did the last time. I want to go to him. I need to go to him, to comfort him, to protect him. He regains his balance with his usual speed and spins to face the door with fists clenched. I brace along with him for an attack that doesn't come. He remains in fighter stance, facing the door for a full minute. I've never seen him so still. Another minute passes, and then his mom joins him on the porch. She tries to touch his arm, but he jerks away and doesn't even look at her. Eventually, she gives up. As soon as she's gone, all the tension leaves his body. He presses the heels of his hands into his eyes, and his shoulders begin to shake. He looks up to my window. I wave, but he doesn't respond. I realize he can't see me because my lights are off. I run to the switch. But by the time I return to the window, he's gone. I press my forehead, my palms, my forearms against the glass. I've never wanted out of my skin more. The Hidden World. Sometimes the world reveals itself to you. I'm alone in the darkening sunroom. Late afternoon sun cuts a trapezoid of light through the glass window. I look up and see particles of dust drifting, crystal white and luminous in the suspension of light. There are entire worlds that exist just beneath our notice of them. Half-life. It's a strange thing to realize that you're willing to die. It doesn't come in a flash, a sudden epiphany. It happens slowly, a balloon leak in reverse. The sight of Ollie crying alone on his porch will not leave me. I pore over the pictures that he sent from school. I make myself a place in every single one. Maddie in the library. Maddie standing next to Ollie's locker, waiting to go to class. Maddie as girl most likely to. I memorize every inch of my family photo, trying to divine its secrets. I marvel at the not-sick Maddie. Baby Maddie, her life stretching before her with endless possibility. Ever since Ollie came into my life, there have been two Maddies. The one who lives through books and doesn't want to die, and the one who lives and suspects that death will be a small price to pay for it. The first Maddie is surprised at the direction of her thoughts. The second Maddie, the one from the Hawaii photograph, she's like a god, impervious to cold, famine, disease, natural and man-made disasters. She's impervious to heartbreak. The second Maddie knows that this pale half-life is not really living. Goodbye. Dear Mom, the first thing is that I love you. You already know that. But I may not get the chance to tell you again. So, I love you. I love you. I love you. You are smart and strong and kind and selfless. I couldn't have wished for a better mom. You're not going to understand what I'm going to say. I don't know if I understand it myself. Because of you, I'm alive, Mom, and I'm so, so grateful for that. Because of you, I've survived this long and gotten a chance to know my small part of the world. But it's not enough. It's not your fault. It's this impossible life. I'm not doing this just because of Ollie. Or maybe I am. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It's Ollie and it's not Ollie at the same time. It's like I can't look at the world in the old way anymore. I found this new part of myself when I met him, and the new part doesn't know how to stay quiet and still and just observe. Do you remember when we read The Little Prince together for the first time? I was so upset that he died in the end. I didn't understand how he could choose death just so he could get back to his rose. I think I understand it now. He wasn't choosing to die. His rose was his whole life. Without her, he wasn't really alive. I don't know, Mom. I don't know what I'm doing, only that I have to. Sometimes I wish I could go back to the way I was before I knew anything. But I can't. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I love you. Maddie. The Five Senses. Hearing. The alarm's keypad tries to announce my escape by emitting a loud beep each time I press a number. I can only hope that the sound is too unexpected and my mom's room too far away from the door for her to hear it. The door unseals with a sigh. I'm outside. The world is so quiet, it roars. Touch. The front door handle is metal cool and smooth, almost slippery. It's easy to let go of it, and I do. Sight. It's 4 a.m. and too dark for detail. My eyes take in only the general shape of things, fuzzy silhouettes against the night sky, large tree, smaller tree, steps, garden, stone path leading to a gate with a picket fence on either side. Gate, gate, gate. Smell. I'm in Ollie's garden. The air is full, ripe with scent. Flowers, earth, my expanding fear. I store it away in my lungs. I toss pebbles at his window, willing him to come out. Taste. Ollie's in front of me, stunned. I don't say anything. I press my lips to his. At first he's frozen, uncertain and unyielding, but then he's not. All at once he pulls me tight against him. One of his hands is in my hair, and the other one is gripping my waist. He tastes just like I remember. Other worlds. We come to our senses. Well, Ollie comes to his. He pulls away, grips my shoulders with both hands.
What are you doing out here? Are you all right? Is something wrong? Is your mom okay?
I'm all bravado. I'm fine. She's fine. I'm running away. The light from his room above casts just enough light so I can see confusion across the planes of his face.
I don't understand, he says.
I take a deep breath, but freeze midway. The night air is cold and moist and heavy and completely unlike any air I've ever breathed. I tried to unbreathe it, to expel it from my lungs. My lips tingle and I'm lightheaded. Is that just fear? Or is it something else?
Maddie, Maddie, he whispers against my ear. What have you done?
I can't answer. My throat is blocked like I've swallowed a stone.
Try not to breathe, he says,
and starts guiding me back to my house. I let him pull me for a second, maybe two, but then I stop moving.
What is it? Can you walk? Do you need me to carry you?
I shake my head and pull my hand from his. I take a sip of night air. I said I'm running away. He makes a sound like a growl.
What are you talking about? Do you have a death wish?
Opposite, I say. Will you help me?
With what?
I don't have a car. I don't know how to drive. I don't know anything about the world. He makes another sound halfway between a growl and a laugh. I wish I could see his eyes in the dark. Something slams. A door? I grab his hands and pull us both flat against the side of his house.
What was that?
Jesus, a door. From my house.
I press myself flatter against the wall, trying to disappear. I peek over to the path leading from my house, fully expecting to see my mother coming down it. But she's not there. I close my eyes. Take me to the roof.
Maddie,
I'll explain everything. My entire plan hangs on him helping me. I didn't really consider what would happen if he refused. We are quiet for one breath. And then two. And then three. He takes my hand and guides me around to the side of his house farthest from mine. There's a tall ladder leading to the roof.
Are you afraid of heights?
He asks. I don't know. I start climbing. I duck down as soon as we get to the roof, but Ollie says there's no need.
Most people don't look up anyway, he says.
It takes a few minutes for my heart to return to normal. Ollie folds himself down with his usual unusual grace. I'm happy to watch him move.
So, what now?
He asks after a time. I look around. I'd always wanted to know what he did up here. The roof is gabled in parts, but we're sitting on a flat section toward the back. I make out shapes, a small wooden table with a mug, a lamp, and some crumpled papers. Maybe he writes up here, composes bad poetry, limericks. Does that lamp work? I ask. He wordlessly turns it on, and it casts a diffuse circle of light around us. I'm almost afraid to look at him. The crumpled papers on the table are fast food wrappers. Not a secret poet, then. Next to the table, there's a dusty gray tarp covering something, or some things. The ground is littered with tools, wrenches, wire cutters in various sizes, hammers, and a few others that I don't recognize. There's even a blowtorch. I finally look over at him. His elbows are on his knees and he's staring out at the slowly brightening sky. What do you do up here? I ask.
That can't possibly matter right now.
His voice is hard, and he doesn't look at me. There's no trace of the boy who kissed me so desperately a few minutes ago. His fear for me has crowded everything else out. Sometimes you do things for the right reasons, and sometimes for the wrong ones, and sometimes it's impossible to tell the difference. I have pills, I say. He's barely moving as it is, but now he grows completely still.
What pills?
They're experimental, not FDA approved. I ordered them online from Canada. The lie is easy, effortless.
Online? How do you know they're even safe?
I did a lot of research.
But still, you can't be sure.
I'm not reckless. I hold his eyes. These lies are for his own protection. Already he looks relieved. I press on. They should give me a few days outside. I didn't tell my mom because she wouldn't want to risk it, but I...
Because it's risky. You just said they're not FDA.
They're safe enough for a few days. My tone holds no doubt. I wait, hoping that he will swallow the lie.
Jesus.
He drops his face into his hands and holds it there. When he looks up, it's a less obstinate Ollie staring back at me. Even his voice softens.
You could have told me this 5 minutes ago.
I make my best effort to lighten the mood. We were kissing. And then you were getting angry with me. I'm blushing from the talk of kissing and from my easy lying. I was going to tell you. I am telling you. I just did. He's much too smart to fall for this, but he wants it to be true. He wants it to be true more than he wants the truth. The smile that breaks across his face is cautious, but so beautiful that I can't look away. I would lie to him again for that smile. Now, I say, what's under that thing? He hands me a corner of the tarp, and I pull it aside. At first, I'm not sure what I'm looking at. It's like reading a seemingly random collection of words before the sentence becomes clear. It's beautiful, I say.
It's called an orrery.
This is what you've been doing up here? Making universes? He shrugs. A small wind blows, and the planets spin slowly. We both watch their motion without speaking.
Are you sure about this?
Doubt has crept back into his voice. Please help me, Ollie. Please. I point to the orrery. I need to escape, too. Just for a little while.
He nods. Where do you want to go?
Aloha means hello and goodbye. Part 2. Email. Mahalo for choosing Plumeria Airlines. Plumeria Airlines. Get ready to say aloha. Your flight details are below. Confirmation number AFTOOQ. Departing October 10th, 2015, 7 a.m. from LAX, Los Angeles, California, to OGG, Kahului, Hawaii. Passengers, Madeline Whittier and Oliver Bright. Class, coach. Seats, 21F and 21E. Happy already.
Mads, be serious. We can't go to Hawaii.
Why not? I got us plane tickets. I booked us a hotel. We're sitting in Ollie's car in the driveway. He puts the key in the ignition but doesn't turn it.
Are you kidding?
He asks, scrutinizing my face for evidence that I'm kidding. He doesn't find any and begins shaking his head slowly.
Hawaii is 3,000 miles away.
Hence the airplane. He ignores my attempt at levity.
You're serious. When did you do this? How? Why?
One more question and you'll have a fast five, I say. He leans forward, presses his forehead into the steering wheel. Last night, with a credit card, because I want to see the world.
You have a credit card?
I got my own a few weeks ago. There are perks to hanging out with an older woman. He pulls his forehead off the wheel, but still stares straight ahead, not meeting my eyes.
What if something happens to you?
Nothing will.
But what if it does?
I have the pills, Ollie. They're going to work. He squeezes his eyes shut and puts his hand on the key.
You know, we have plenty of world right here in Southern California.
But no humuhumu nuku nuku apua'a. A small half-smile forms at the corner of his lips. I need to make it spread across his entire face. He turns to face me.
What are you talking about?
The humuhumu nuku nuku apua'a.
What is a humu whatever?
The state fish of Hawaii. His smile broadens.
Of course it is.
He turns the key in the ignition. His eyes linger on his house and his smile fades just slightly.
How long?
2 nights.
Okay.
He grabs my hand and gives it a quick kiss.
Let's go see this fish.
Ollie's mood gets better, lighter somehow, the farther away from his house that we get. This trip gives him the perfect excuse to let go of the burden of his family for a little while, at least. Also, an old friend of his from New York, Zach, lives in Maui.
You'll love him, he tells me.
I'll love everything, I respond. Our flight's not until 7 a.m., and I have a detour I want to make. Being in his car is like being in a very loud, very fast-moving bubble. He refuses to open the windows. Instead, he presses a button on the dashboard that prevents air circulation. The sound of the tires on asphalt is like someone hissing low and constant into my ears. I fight the urge to cover them. Ollie says we're not going very fast, but to me, we're hurtling through space. I've read that passengers on high-speed trains say that the world outside the train blurs from the speed. I know we're not going anywhere near that fast, but still, the landscape moves too quickly for my slow eyes to hold on to. I barely catch glimpses of houses in the brown hills in the distance. Overhead, signs with cryptic symbols and writing come and go before I can decipher them. Bumper stickers and license plates appear and disappear in a blink. Even though I understand the physics of it, I find it strange that my body could be moving, though I am sitting still. Well, not exactly still. I'm pushed backward into my seat whenever Ollie accelerates, and I lurch forward whenever he brakes. Every so often we slow down enough, and I can see other people in their cars. We pass a woman shaking her head and slapping at the steering wheel with her hands. Only after we've passed her do I figure out that she was probably dancing to music. Two kids in the back of another car stick their tongues out at me and laugh. I don't do anything because I'm not sure what the etiquette is for that. Gradually, we slow down to a more human speed and leave the highway. Where are we? I ask.
She lives in Koreatown.
My head buzzes from trying to look everywhere at once. There are brightly lit signs and billboards written only in Korean. Since I can't read the language, the signs seem like art pieces with beautiful, mysterious forms. Of course, they probably just say things as mundane as restaurant or pharmacy or open 24 hours. It's early, but still, there are so many people doing so many things. Walking or talking or sitting or standing or running or riding bicycles. I don't quite believe they're really real. They're just like the mini figures I pose in my architecture models, here to give Koreatown the vigor of life. Or maybe it's me that's not really real, not really here at all. We drive along for a few minutes more. Eventually, we pull up to a two-story apartment complex with a fountain in the courtyard. Ali undoes his seatbelt, but makes no move to leave the car.
Nothing can happen to you, he says.
I reach over and take his hand. Thank you, is all I can think to say. I want to tell him that it's his fault that I'm out here, that love opens you up to the world. I was happy before I met him, but I'm alive now, and those are not the same thing. Infected. Carla screams and covers her face when she first sees me. Are you a ghost? She grabs my shoulders, squeezes me against her bosom, rocks me side to side, and then squeezes me again. I don't have any air left in my lungs when she's finished. What are you doing here? You can't be here, she says, still squeezing me. I'm happy to see you too, I squeak. She pulls away, shakes her head as if I were some kind of a miracle, and pulls me back in for more. Oh, my girl, she says. Oh, how I missed you. She holds my face in her hands. I missed you, too. I'm so sorry about...
Stop. You don't have anything to be sorry for.
You lost your job because of me. She shrugs. I got another one. Besides, it's you that I miss. I miss you, too.
Your mama did what she had to do.
I don't want to think about my mom. So I look around for Ali, who's standing off in the distance. You remember Ali, I say.
How could I forget that face and that body? She says, definitely loud enough for him to hear.
She marches over to him and pulls him into a hug only slightly more restrained than the one she gave me.
You taking care of our girl?
She pulls away and pats him a little too hard on his cheek.
Ali rubs it. I'm doing my best. I don't know if you know this, but she can be a little stubborn.
Carla looks back and forth between us for a long second, noting the tension between us. We're still standing in her doorway.
Come inside, she says.
We didn't think you would be awake so early, I say as we enter.
You stop sleeping when you get old. You'll see.
I want to ask, will I ever grow old? But instead I ask, is Rosa here?
Upstairs, asleep. You want me to wake her?
We don't have time. I just wanted to see you. She takes my face into her hands again and re-examines me, this time with nurse's eyes.
I must have missed a lot of things. What are you doing here?
How are you feeling?
Ollie steps closer, wanting to hear my answer. I wrap my arm